Bank of America sees losses.
And Goldman Sachs sees gains.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Tuesday, October 19th.
Coming up, are green energy subsidies a good idea?
But first, Bank of America lost more than $7 billion in its latest quarter. The bank says that's because of a one-time charge related to credit and debit card reform. On the other hand, investment bank Goldman Sachs reported it made nearly $2 billion last quarter. So we're going to dig a little deeper and ask the question, why the disparity in this morning's earnings? And J.P. Morgan Fund's chief market strategist David Kelly is with us from New York. Good morning, David.
Glad to be here.
All right, tale of two banks, right? How generally are banks doing right now?
Well, overall, the banking situation is actually improving. Obviously, we got a big charge this morning from Bank of America. They've decided to recognize some of the future costs they see from financial regulation. But if you look past that charge, what we're seeing from Goldman, from Bank of America, from other banks, is a general improvement in capital ratios. They're building up their capital. They're trying to be stronger banks for the future.
Talk about charge. When you say charge, what does that mean?
What it means is they recognize that various changes in financial reform are going to close off areas of profitability in the future. And so rather than take those losses or those reductions in profit as they come, they want to recognize them up front to essentially be honest with the shareholders about what all this is going to mean for them.
So it's a one-time charge. It's really it's not even money, right? It's not real money.
That's right. It's just an accounting entry to say this is what we think the cost of these provisions will be for our institution.
Very quickly, David, talk about the foreclosures we've seen, many of which have been suspended. How are those affecting the bank so far?
Well, we're still seeing the after effects of the huge financial crisis and the huge bust in the mortgage business. And I think the delay in foreclosures, some of the putbacks of foreclosures where banks actually end up having to buy back the loans themselves, these things are muddying up the system. And I think they are slowing down a recovery in housing overall. But the big picture is the housing industry will gradually recover, and the banks do appear to be gradually strengthening here.
David Kelly over at J.P. Morgan Funds. David, thanks.
You're very welcome.
Meanwhile, Bank of America says foreclosures will go forward on more than 100,000 properties after seizures were halted a week ago.
For more on that part of the story, we're joined by our own Mitchell Hartman. Good morning, Mitchell.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So, Mitchell, why has Bank of America resumed foreclosures?
Well, you'll remember that B of A and also GMAC, which is another big mortgage servicer, are under scrutiny for having done these so-called robo-filings, having teams swoop in and sign hundreds of foreclosure documents a day, allegedly without reading them, sometimes maybe not even knowing what was in them. B of A now says they've reviewed their process, they've found nothing amiss, and they'll resume, as you said, more than 100,000 foreclosures. This is in 23 states where judge's approval is required. They're going state by state elsewhere in the country. GMAC also said it's slowly going to restart the foreclosure process.
So the banks are making the case that everything is okay. Is everyone else going to be okay with that?
Consumer advocates say that's hard to believe that they've done these reviews and everything is fine. 50 state attorneys general have also announced a nationwide investigation. But Chris Whalen of Institutional Risk Analytics says these foreclosure reviews don't matter very much in the final analysis.
So people need to understand that in most cases, the bank is going to win because they lent money and the borrower has defaulted. Whether or not the paperwork at the courthouse is in place doesn't really matter.
Now, Whalen does say that Wall Street did cut corners. That could spell continuing trouble for banks in the form of lawsuits and at least some foreclosures maybe being held up or even reversed.
Okay, thanks, Mitchell. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
Thanks.
So what do all those foreclosures mean for the housing market? For that, we turn to Tony Arnold of Chicago Public Radio.
Talk to home builders and you're likely to hear this.
Our number one competitor these days has been the foreclosure market.
That's John Wozniak with J. Lawrence Homes in suburban Chicago. Wozniak says a few years ago, before the housing market blew up, his company was building 36,000 homes per year. This year, it's closer to 3,000. Housing analyst Chris Huckstead is with Metro Study. He says the latest foreclosure mess could give home builders a boost.
With all of a sudden this kind of a red flag being raised on foreclosures, more buyers might be pushed in towards the new home market.
Wozniak is hesitant to celebrate just yet, though.
Stalling the foreclosures that are occurring is only prolonging the fear or the anxiety.
Wozniak says on the plus side, business is down so much, he can't really be heard any worse. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, October 19th. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers section at our website, marketplace.org.
Now we're going to get a take on the global perspective. What's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects the United States?
We'll start in China, where we're getting a mixed message on the amount of rare earth metals the country exports. Those are minerals used in hybrid vehicles, iPhones, high-tech missiles. Well, the state-run newspaper Daily quoted a government official saying the country will cut exports by a third. But then, hours after that article came out, another Chinese official issued a correction saying exports will remain the same. Why is it such a big deal? Well, China produces 95% of the global supply of rare earths. Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports.
When it comes to U.S.-China relations, trade war is a term being thrown around a lot these days. The notion that China's drastically cutting rare earth exports may not signal a war, but it would certainly be a battle, one worth billions.
This is not a battle that they can win.
Economist Arthur Kroeber doesn't buy the rumor that China will further cut rare earth exports. Why? Despite their name, there are plenty of rare earth reserves outside of China. They will be developed, and China knows this.
The more China attempts to use its present monopoly position as leverage in international disputes, the more certain they make it that that monopoly position will be destroyed.
China's monopoly on these minerals may be short-lived. One big customer, Japan, is reportedly looking to Mongolia and Canada in an effort to reduce its dependence on Chinese rare earth metals. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
The strikes continue in France, putting the country's fuel supplies in jeopardy. Workers are protesting against the government's plan to raise the retirement age. Marketplace's Europe correspondent Stephen Beard reports.
France has not been paralyzed, but transportation has been severely disrupted. All 12 of the country's oil refineries have been shut down. Oil deliveries have slowed to a trickle because many tanker drivers have joined the strike. Some 2,000 gas stations around the country have run dry. Panic buying by drivers has made matters worse. In spite of the disruption, around 70% of the people, according to the latest poll, support the protests. Patrick Novak is a union organizer involved in the action. He says the government's reform is deeply unpopular.
I never seen so many people so disappointed about the government in place today in France.
The government says it will press ahead with the pension reform regardless of any protests. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, October 19th. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers section at our website, marketplace.org.
Now some numbers from Johnson & Johnson. Today, the company announced it eked out a 2% increase in profit for its third quarter. But investors were paying attention to something else, a voluntary recall involving more bottles of children's Tylenol. There have been complaints of the over-the-counter painkiller smelling musty and moldy. Reporter Andrea Gardner explains.
My baby Olivia is running a fever. Usually I'd give her infant Tylenol, but it was recalled back in April. So now generic acetaminophen is my only choice. I don't usually give my daughter generic drugs. I buy it for myself, but when it comes to my baby, I go with the brand. I asked consumer psychologist Kit Yarrow what that's all about.
Parents are just 100% dialed into caring for their kids, and especially when we're dealing with health products, if there's any risk at all that you're jeopardizing that, that's just going to drum up a boatload of guilt. That's really driving a lot of brand purchases, that not only is your kid going to get over their cold, but that you're a good parent.
But after months of having only generics to choose from, parents have realized there's no boogeyman in the bottle. Yarrow says this could be a game changer, especially in the down economy.
I don't see parents going back to branded products when they've realized that generics work just the same.
An early survey suggests moms are split. Just about half said they still trust brands like Tylenol the most. About a quarter said J&J products are about the same as generics. But only a small percentage of parents would need to change their minds to create a boon for generics manufacturers. Many drugstores have already asked them to ramp up production. One of the top makers, Activist, says it's increased production fivefold for its children's ibuprofen products. But pharmaceutical analyst Damian Conover with Morningstar says when the Johnson's brands hit the shelf, the balance could shift.
You've got a brand name that's very entrenched in consumers' minds. That is going to be very difficult for other providers of these over-the-counter medicines to really come in and displace after the manufacturing comes back online.
Conover says expect a barrage of ads from J&J in 2011 and 12 with a message of trust and changes made in the wake of the recall. In Los Angeles, I'm Andrea Gardner for Marketplace.
We're just a couple of months away from expiration day for some key subsidies for fuel-efficient cars, specifically tax breaks for hybrid vehicles and charging stations for plug-ins. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
Here's how a charging station works. Early adopter Rob Neighbor of suburban Washington's already got one in his garage. Neighbor pulls into home in his special edition Toyota RAV4 EV for electric vehicle. He walks over to a 4-foot metal box and pulls out what looks like a ping pong paddle.
And I put the paddle right into the car, which is a lot like putting an 8-track in a tape deck.
Voila, car starts charging. But the charging station costs $2,000. The federal tax credit covers half the costs. And before it expires in January, Jay Friedland at the advocacy group Plug In America wants Congress to renew it.
If you look at all of the technologies, electric drive, actually running the wheels to the ground on electricity is the most efficient way to do it.
Electric cars are a favored child of the government. It also gives loans to alternative fuel car makers and credits to buyers of plug-in vehicles.
There is an element of picking winners. There's no question.
Analyst Michael Liebreich is with Bloomberg Clean Energy Finance.
In the scramble for clean energy, sometimes that's become a little bit forgotten.
He wants the market to pick technology winners, not the government. Because what if a different fuel turns out better? What if tomorrow's game changer isn't even a car?
We must choose. But choose wisely.
We all remember the Indiana Jones movie where evil Nazi guy picks the wrong Holy Grail. Historically, the feds have chosen poorly too, says energy subsidy analyst Doug Koplow. Take biofuels. Washington has poured millions into energy from plants, even though Koplow says the planting process can eliminate forests and land for growing food, a net minus for the planet.
My concern is that a lot of these narrowly targeted parochial subsidies will miss the bigger picture and therefore make it much more difficult to solve the underlying problem.
Koplow prefers policy that's neutral, say taxing carbon emitters to reflect the true cost of carbon pollution. That treats all the alternatives fairly. But for now, that's politically impossible. So electric car companies say, keep up the subsidies for us as a way to do something now. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Chevron rolled out a new ad campaign. It's called We Agree. And in it, the oil giant highlights efforts to develop renewable energy and create jobs. But before the giant could get the campaign all the way out, pranksters stole the company's thunder. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler explains.
Chevron expected its new ad campaign would attract interest, says spokesman Morgan Crinklaw.
Chevron's ad campaign is really designed to get people talking about the common ground that we share on key energy issues.
People are talking, but not about common ground. Activists released fake Chevron ads, identical in design, except the phony ads focused on alleged environmental abuses. Chevron spent millions of dollars on its campaign. The pranksters' counter-campaign operated on a shoestring budget. Maria Ramos organized the hoax for the Rainforest Action Network.
Honestly, probably something like hundreds of dollars. Not much at all.
Despite the low cost, marketing expert Jeff Gregory with Brand Council says the stunt will undermine Chevron's campaign.
Now people are going to go, Chevron, hey, aren't those the people that got spoofed the other day?
The spokesman for Chevron says the company is considering its legal options. In the meantime, Chevron plans to continue its ad campaign as planned. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
And finally, a friendly reminder to the best and the brightest at Columbia Business School. Members of the Investment Bankers Club were sent an email telling them to make sure to do a few things when they go to recruiting events. Not to brush up on credit default swaps or interest rates. They seem to have that part down, Steve. What were they told to do?
They were told to brush their teeth and carry antiperspirant, and best of all, no tacky cufflinks.
You can't have tacky cufflinks at those recruiting events.
I have so many.
I don't even know how to put them on. But anyway, in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.